Namaste Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Continuing with Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 1, Questions by the Sages, text 3. Nigama kalpa tado danditam phalam. Shukam utharam richa drava samyutam. Pivita Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Moho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka Nigama, the Vedic literatures, Kalpataro, the desire tree, Galitam, fully matured, Palam, fruit. By the way, it's not phalam unless you are Bengali and you want to read Sanskrit like Bengali. So it's phalam. Shuka. Srila Shukadeva Goswami. The original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. Mukat. From the lips of. Amrita. Nectar. Drava. Semi-solid and soft, and therefore easily swallowable. Sangyutam, perfect in all respects. Pibata, do relish it. Bhagavatam, the book dealing in the science of the eternal relation with the Lord. Rasam, juice, that which is relishable. Alayam, until liberation, or even in a liberated condition. Muhu, always. Aho, oh. Rasika, those who are full in the knowledge of mellows. Bhuvi, on the earth. Bhavuka, expert and thoughtful. Translation. O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Continue the purport. The Supreme Personality Godhead is therefore described in the Shruti mantras, Vedic hymns, as the fountainhead of all rasas. When one associates with the Supreme Lord and exchanges one's constitutional rasa with the Lord, then the living being is actually happy. These Shruti mantras indicate that every living being has its constitutional position, which is endowed with a particular type of rasa to be exchanged with the Personality of Godhead. In the liberated condition only, this primary rasa is experienced in full. In the material existence, the rasa is experienced in the perverted form, which is temporary. And thus, the rasas of the material world are exhibited in the material form of raudra, anger, and so on. Therefore, one who attains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are the basic principles of activities, can understand the false representations of the original rasas, which are reflected in the material world. A learned scholar seeks to relish the real rasa in the spiritual form. In the beginning, he desires to become one with the Supreme. Thus, less intelligent transcendentalists cannot go beyond this conception of becoming one with the spirit whole, knowing without knowing of the different rasas. In this shloka, it is definitely stated that the spiritual rasa, which is relished even in the liberated stage, can be experienced in the literature of Srimad Bhagavatam, due to its being the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge. By submissively hearing this transcendental literature, one can attain the full pleasure of its heart's desire. But one must be very careful to hear the message from the right source. Srimad Bhagavatam is exactly received from the right source. It was brought by Narada Muni from the spiritual world and given to his disciple, Sri Vyasadeva. The latter, in turn, delivered the message to his son, Srila Shukadeva Goswami. And Srila Shukadeva Goswami delivered the message to Maharaj Pritchett just 7 days before the king's death. Srila Shukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul from his very birth. He was liberated even in the womb of his mother, and he did not undergo any sort of spiritual training after his birth. At birth, no one is qualified, neither in the mundane nor in the spiritual sense. But Sri Shukadeva Goswami, due to his being a perfectly liberated soul, did not have to undergo an evolutionary process for spiritual realization. Yet, despite his being a completely liberated soul, situated in the transcendental position above the three modes of material nature, he was attracted to the transcendental rasa of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is adored by liberated souls who sing Vedic hymns. The Supreme Lord's pastimes are more attractive to liberated souls than to mundane people. He is of necessity, not impersonal, because it is only possible to carry on transcendental rasa with a person. We'll stop there for today. Om Ajnanachamanandasya Gananjana Shalakya Chakshun Militam Yena Tazmai Sri Gurave Namah. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunidhananda Sri Advaita Vedana Sivasvi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nigama Kalputtaro Galitam Palam. The desire tree, which gives mature fruit. We were speaking yesterday at the University of Melbourne about desire. And we were trying to explain to people that unless they can deal with the desire issue, their life will always be missing the point. They generally have three choices. They can just wallow in desire without restriction. And I explained to them that obviously they wouldn't be at the University of Melbourne if they followed that program. At some point they had to control themselves and discipline themselves to attain a material goal. The second choice is to try to annihilate all desire. And I pointed out how that is impractical and will never happen because sentient beings always desire. And then the third method is to learn the bhakti science of desire management, how to elevate desire to perfection. I hesitated whether to use the word perfection, learn how to desire perfectly, because people think that's just so unrealistic, perfection. What is that anyway? Probably at best they can think of perfection in terms of sports, some kind of perfect, flawless game. Or sometimes they say that politicians, they have an almost perfect campaign in which they don't say anything stupid and all the voters are attracted to them. So perfection. People don't know what that is. They're accustomed to such a low level of existence and therefore they have such low aspirations. It's amazing how people are convinced that, well, you know, generally it doesn't get any better than the way it is now. So the best you can try for is how to get better sense gratification. That's about as best as it gets in this world. So people resign themselves to that kind of life. And they shed any responsibility for that kind of life. How do they shed responsibility? Deny responsibility? They say, look, I didn't make the world this way. We're just trying to cope as best we can. We're just trying to deal with this world as best we can. We didn't make it like this. So we're just trying to get fulfilled. We're trying to achieve some goals without hurting too many people. And if we can help a few people, that's nice. People think that's as best as the world gets. So when you talk about learning how to desire and perfection, I can see them scratching their heads. How to desire and perfection? Because they know from their material experience, that is, that desire is kind of a rocky road. And you got to expect some setbacks. You have to expect some frustrations. And you can also expect some feverish exhibition of desire. So they're willing to accept the whole package. Victory and defeat in the desire department. They feel this is all part of the learning experience. Of course, whenever I asked them, what is the lesson that you're supposed to learn, they can never answer. They just say, life's a learning experience. It's all part of your evolutionary development. Okay, so where is that evolutionary development headed? What's the goal of it? If you say it's all part of your spiritual evolutionary development, all right. So describe, where is it heading? What is the ultimate platform of development? So in this way, perfection is a lost subject. But the Bhagavatam is not afraid to address perfection. Perfection manifesting as perfect desire. Perfect desire means in relation to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All your desires are hooked up to Krishna. And therefore, you can experience the full potential of desire. You can taste the full beverage of rasa, the spiritual tastes and flavors that manifest in the relationship between the living entity and Krishna. We've heard that in the material existence, the rasa is experienced in the perverted form, which is temporary. This is why you get angry. This is why you get frustrated. This is why you get cynical. Because you tried to taste, and you didn't get that fullness that you wanted, or that permanence that you wanted. So you have to admit that to yourself. Be brave and face the music. Face the truth that you tried to enjoy the rasas, the perverted flavors of material existence. You were let down, and therefore you become hard-hearted. It's amazing that people, although they say they want love, they don't know how to love. They don't have a clue what love is. And that makes them even more bewildered. To the extent that they become so depressed, they want to commit suicide, they want to bury themselves in all sorts of injurious activities. I'll lose myself in a gambling casino, or I'll lose myself in corporate advancement. It's all because they don't know how to satisfy the heart with pure love. As the purport explains, when one associates with the Supreme Lord and exchanges one's constitutional rasa with the Lord, then the living being is actually happy. Otherwise, we're like amputated limbs. We can't get it together. Because we're not the complete package, we're just a tiny part. When will we get that point into our head? We're too tiny to get it together on our own. We need to be connected to Supreme Absolute Truth. And then we can function properly and in relationship with Krishna. We can exchange our constitutional relationship with its constitutional taste, and then we'll actually be happy. We can't be happy on our own. I know it's very humiliating to admit, because you are taught since birth to go out and get what you need. Compete, struggle, cope, push ahead, achieve. Carve out a situation for yourself and your friends or loved ones. So you feel this burden on your shoulders. I've got to do something for me. I've got to carve out something for me. And so then you start dreaming, what's it going to be like? What is my scene going to be like? I'll have this, I'll have that. And there'll be these loving exchanges around me. I'll be tasting these flavors with this person and that person. There'll be children, I'll taste that relationship. There'll be romance, I'll taste that relationship. There'll be servitorship. Hopefully I'll have some servants and won't have to serve anyone. In this way, we imagine the full picture of taste that we're going to get. And as soon as you're not able to see that in the slightest, then you become very depressed to the point of even suicide. I don't see any flavors available for me. Everything looks bleak, desolate, like after some kind of total nuclear annihilation. No flavors for me. So Srimad Bhagavatam is giving you not simply knowledge, but that knowledge has taste. It's not just some kind of metaphysical encyclopedia. It is the embodiment of flavor. As we read, spiritual rasa can be experienced in the literature of Srimad Bhagavatam due to its being the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge. So you can actually experience the full, perfect spiritual flavors through Srimad Bhagavatam. That is extraordinary. Therefore, it is stated that Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. It's not just information. It is experience. It is the flavor of relationships that is available in Srimad Bhagavatam. As we heard, by submissively hearing this transcendental literature, one can attain the full pleasure of his heart's desire. What do you think? Just by hearing some literature, you can attain the full pleasure of your heart's desire? It can't be like that. Nah, you need a lot of things for your heart to attain its full pleasure. You need the right person around you when you want the person to be around, and not around when you don't want the person to be around. You need to surround yourself with different relationships. In this way, you can take your pick, cherry picking. Yes, I shall take this relationship now. All right, enough of that one. Now, another flavor here. So that's how we think we're going to get the full pleasure of our heart's desire. Most people don't simply want luxury and ample consumer goods. You may remember, if you've ever had some degree of luxury or comfort or possessions, you're always thinking, who's going to enjoy this with me? Who's going to experience this with me? That's the natural tendency of the living entity. You can't be alone because there's no flavor being alone. People are so desperate for relationship flavors that, as you heard, if there's no one around, no other human being around, they'll try to keep a pet and exchange flavors with the pet, even though the pet's of a different species. Now, how can it be so that just by submissively hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, you can attain the full pleasure of your heart's desire. This is a great mystery that only the bhakti yogi can experience. It's not just about information. Although it's true that information in of itself will increase your attraction for Krishna. Because the more you know someone, the more you love that person. If that person is attractive, and Krishna is all attractive. So it's true, the more you know about Krishna, the more you'll love Krishna. At the same time, the Bhagavatam is not just information or knowledge. Its flavor, its taste, the information about Krishna is saturated with rasa. You can only understand that reality through devotional service. You can't understand it with material intelligence or academic ability. And then we've heard that the stipulation for that mystery of associating with Bhagavatam to give the full pleasure of the heart, for that mystery to unfold, you have to be careful to hear Bhagavatam from the right source. Someone was asking yesterday about the origin of Bhagavatam. Is it just spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prichit? But today we hear that Srimad Bhagavatam was brought by Narada Muni from the spiritual world and given to his disciple, Sri Vyasadeva. And he in turn delivered the message to his son, Srila Shukadeva Goswami, and so forth. Do we really accept that something can have an origin in the spiritual world? Well, you have an origin in the spiritual world, so why can't Bhagavatam have an origin? If you acknowledge a non-material identity for yourself, why can't you acknowledge a non-material identity for Srimad Bhagavatam? Why be prejudiced? Now, do we accept Srimad Bhagavatam as a literary incarnation of Krishna, and it gives the full pleasure to the heart? Do we accept that as a religious belief, or are we motivated to experience that, to put it to the test? Hopefully you're motivated to put it to the test, and that requires some commitment. Just like when you take biology and they have lab, when you're studying biology, you're committed to do some lab work, whether in college or at the uni. So Bhagavatam is also asking for a commitment. Do some lab work. Engage in devotional service. This is not a belief. This is not a theory. It's meant to be tasted. That's why we hear such a graphic example. The mature fruit, it emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all. Mm-hmm. And in the Sanskrit, we see drava, amrita drava. This nectar is in the form of semi-solid and soft, and therefore easily swallowable fruit. This is very sensory. It's not very theoretical, is it? Semi-solid and soft, and therefore easily swallowable. That's not so religious beliefy, is it? It's about sensory experience. The nectar of Bhagavatam as fruit, semi-solid and soft, easily sliding down your throat. So devotional service gives you the experience of this reality. Now, will we pursue this as a lifelong career? people are very patient about their careers in the material world. That's, I don't mind working for a particular corporation for 30 years until I start rising through the ranks. Or people will jump from one job to another, trying to get a higher and higher position. In this way, in the working world, you're looking at your whole life working, right? You're looking at your job as like, you figure you're going to be working at least till you're in your 60s, if not more. It's getting harder and harder for people to retire in their 60s. So, you're looking at, let's say if you're in your 20s now, you're looking at least 40 years in the working world. That's a lot of time, isn't it? 40 years. Now, can you see your bhakti development in that way? Oh, 40 years, huh? Well, I'll chant Hare Krishna for a couple of years. But I don't know. It's a big world out there. And I'm willing to commit 40, 50 years to achieve something in the material world. But for understanding my real self in connection to the Supreme Self, I don't know, is it worth that much? After all, the world is full of so many religious beliefs, and so many people are trying to do good. What's so special about bhakti anyway? It's true that you'll find bhakti in all genuine spiritual endeavors to some degree. But what Srimad Bhagavatam is trying to give you is a taste that is equal to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A flavor that is equal to Krishna. And how is it that that flavor is made available? It's because of motivation. We spoke yesterday about how motivation is a big thing in spiritual life. It's not that, well, never mind my motivation, just look what I've done. That's not the way Krishna deals with things, though. He looks at the motivation. People in ordinary relationships do that, don't they? Well, I just want to know what's really motivating you. I mean, thanks for the gift, but what's behind it? Right? I have seen, I've heard about it. Ladies are always wondering, what's his motivation? Does he really mean what he says? Will he still love me tomorrow? What's behind it all? And they talk with their friends. What do you think his motivation is? Right? Isn't that so? There you go. They're constantly analyzing. And the men are presenting themselves as very practical. Well, we don't care about motivation. We just want that, you know, we get certain things at the home, and that's it. We don't, motivation, we don't worry about these subtle things. But actually, that's not true. The men, they want to feel appreciated. They want to feel that they are number one in the world. So they're always looking for a motivation that will make them feel that way, that they are the king of the world. They see themselves as reclining on the waters with their Lakshmi Devi massaging the feet. Yeah. That's the kind of motivation that they want. So actually, whether we admit it or not, motivation is important for everyone. And certainly it's important for the Supreme Person. Krishna is known as Lila Purushottam. He's the best person engaged in pastimes, loving exchanges. So Bhagavatam is meant to train your motivation so that there is no selfish tinge. The Bhagavatam is meant to train you that you don't expect material benefit from Krishna. You don't expect even liberation from the material world. You don't expect mystic powers. You just expect the chance to love Krishna unconditionally. That is what Goloka Vrindavan is all about. unconditional love for Krishna to such an extent that even the residents of Vrindavan don't care whether Krishna is God or not. All they know is he's the sweetest. He's the most flavorable. In this way, Vrindavan is showing you what the core being of, what our core being is about. We want pure loving exchanges. And at the ultimate level of the spiritual world, we don't even care whether Krishna is the supreme or not. Simply, we want to engage in loving affairs with Krishna. So Bhagavatam is training you up how to be an unconditional lover of Krishna. How to purify your motivation. Now, so what if it takes a lifetime? What else better do we have to do? Look at the commitment that the material flavors demand of you. Even the best material flavors, like helping others, it demands a commitment. But still, that flavor is not enough to satisfy the core of your heart. People engage in welfare work in order to feel that I'm helping, I'm doing something for the world. And you like to see the faces of those you've helped because you feel, ooh, I've made a difference. I've explained before, it's the same thing as parents when they give gifts to their children. They want to experience their children's appreciation. They want to identify with the children's development and progress. I explained to you before what Christmas was like in my house. Yes? You don't remember. Oh. Christmas morning, my brother and I, that was the only morning of the year. We were eager to wake up as early as possible. To go downstairs to the Christmas tree and open up all the prezzies. So we would just jump out of bed like at 6 in the morning. And we were ready to race down the stairs and attack the Christmas tree with all the presents underneath it. And then Mother would come out and stop us. No, no, just wait. Your father is not up yet. He's worked so hard to get these presents, and he wants to see the look on your face when you open the presents. We just couldn't relate to that. What does it matter? I mean, you know, let him sleep. The presents are for us. The presents have our name on it. And Mother said, no, 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 just wait. So we just went back to our room and, yeah. We didn't have a clock or watches, so because we were little kids, but you know, every moment just crept by like a yuga. When is Dad going to get up? 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Because it was a holiday, you know, and Dad's resting, for, you know. Finally he gets up. And Mother calls up, okay, kids, you can come downstairs now. Dad is up, and he has his camera to take pictures of you opening the presents. We didn't care about a camera. Taking pictures. What does that matter? Let's just go for it. Anyway, he was there with his camera. And we raced downstairs and attacked the presents, ripping the wrapping off, and Father's picking away. Catching the look of joy on our faces.
Oh, thank you, Father. Thank you for this beautiful toy truck.
So he wanted to enjoy those flavors. Of course, we're not criticizing anyone who takes care of their children. But what we are pointing out is the quest for flavors. Even when helping others, you want to feel you are the doer, you've made a difference. And it's hard for us to understand when Krishna explains that you are not the supreme friend. But to speak of not being the supreme proprietor,
Who are you to think you actually know how to help in the most effective way? We're very presumptuous. That's why Krishna told Arjuna, you're speaking big words about helping, but you are a fool. Padyavadams, you're speaking such big sociological words of charity and philanthropy, but you're a fool. You don't know what real help is. So that is the first time in the course of Bhagavad Gita unfolding that Krishna chastised Arjuna. Apparently you're speaking wise words, but you don't know what you're talking about. You're lamenting for what is not worthy of lamentation. Is that Krishna being heartless? What do you think? Is Krishna being cold and cruel? Is Krishna ignoring our physical needs? Is Krishna ignoring the basic necessities of human life? No, simply Krishna is emphasizing what is the best help and the real lasting help, which makes everything else insignificant in comparison. It's not that Krishna is ignoring our material needs. He even gives advice in Bhagavad Gita to yogis that you can't be a yogi if you eat too much or eat too little, sleep too much or sleep too little. So how are you going to accuse Krishna then of ignoring the body? It's just that Krishna is putting bodily affairs in their place, low. And he's highlighting what is the most important thing. So sometimes people become very frightened by Krishna's insistence on the spiritual platform. And they immediately accuse it. Oh, no, no. We have to take care of the other things too. As if Krishna is overlooking that. In Bhagavad Gita, he speaks about Chaturvidha Bhajante. No. Chaturvarnyam Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. The four divisions of occupation. Krishna says, they were created by me. So what do you want out of him? He says, I created these four divisions of occupational propensity. And in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes the duties of each occupational propensity. The duties of a real brahmana. The duties of administrative marshal type person. The duties of a merchant farmer type. And the duties of a laborer. So how can you say that Krishna is giving us such a dreamy program and ignoring the benefit of the world? This is false ego. This is pride. Because we want to think, I am helping. To admit how helpless and dependent we are takes humility. And humility does not come from contact with the material energy. Humility, real humility, is not just about... Real humility means to acknowledge your dependent position, that you really can't help except going through Krishna. If we can admit that we're looking for flavors no matter what we do, then we'll be able to get a grip on ourselves. We want to taste a particular flavor in whatever kind of relationship we have. When you are considering a particular person to marry, you're sizing that person up. What kind of flavors can you offer? Right? Yes. And people consider a successful marriage, they look at it, oh, they have a good relationship, meaning they have a good exchange of flavors. If you can analyze your life and see how at every moment you're trying for various rasas, various flavors, but in material existence those flavors are perverted. They never give you the substance you want, and they don't last long. Therefore you become so crazy. You become mad. Just, I have to find a flavor that's for real, something that lasts. You put yourself into so many crazy situations just to get a substantial flavor. You work like a dog. You submit to so many embarrassing relationships just with the hope there'll be the right flavor. So Bhagavatam gives you your chance to experience the full pleasure of the heart, to experience the rasas in full because they're in relationship with Krishna. As we read, therefore, one who attains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are the basic principles of activities, can understand the false representations of the original rasas, which are reflected in the material world. This is very deep and very all-encompassing. For example, it is stated that someone who actually understands Krishna's rasalila can never indulge in the perverted reflection that the material world offers, if you actually understand. So Bhagavatam is training you up to gradually understand all of Krishna's pastimes in truth. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvata. Krishna says, if you can actually understand my appearance in this world and my activities, then, if you can understand them in truth, then, mam eti, you'll come to me. So Bhagavatam is training us up how to understand what is real flavor. And so what if it takes a lifetime? We're so miserly in the age of Kali, Kripana, that we're willing to dedicate our whole life for career development. But for our bhakti development, I don't know. We are willing to undergo so many austerities of material existence, putting up with this, putting up with that. Just to taste material flavor. But to tolerate on behalf of Krishna, I don't know how long I can do this. That's why the Bhagavatam says about Kali Yuga, Manda Sumanda Mateo. The Mandas, very slow persons about spiritual realization and very quick about destroying themselves. This is the situation. How to give our heart a chance? This is the fullness of the potential that bhakti offers to everyone. Give your heart a full chance, not a partial, stingy chance. Oh, look at the little thing I've done. Isn't that great? Why don't you give yourself a full chance for full heart development? That can only be done in relation to Krishna. Separate from Krishna, we're like an amputated limb. We can't get it together. But we're going to prove Krishna wrong. No, no. I can stand on my own 2 feet. So please let us consider the at least a lifetime of bhakti. At least. Any questions? Yes.
Just explain to us a great length about the nectar and how it's rasa and it's passed from Narada Muni to Vyasadeva and then Prabhupada Sridhar and such weak nectar. And I was just wondering, why is the Bhagavatam class that we spend sort of 10 minutes actually reading sections out of the Bhagavatam, but then we spend about an hour on explanations about it when it's the actual rasa and not the explanation?
Because it becomes sweeter when devotees discuss it. Just like you heard. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all.
In the Bhagavatam, it's stated, Satam prasangam mama virya samvido bhavanti hritkarna rasayana kata. The talks about Krishna become even more powerful when discussed in the assembly of practitioners. No. This is not a complete understanding. Anything can be used as an example for bringing about understanding of a transcendental point. This is done by the acharyas all the time.
Yeah, what I'm saying is it's self-explanatory about it. It's really
such a way. All right, so when you give class, you can do it your way. Okay? Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yes.
Mark, this Bhagavatam, the core of the Bhagavatam is the pastimes of Krishna. So why the pastimes of the devotees like Dhruva Maharaj, Vishnu Maharaj, all of that, even Shukdev Goswami, Sutta Goswami have been appended? Was this originally same as the Bhagavatam?
Because, as we have heard, the fruit is delivered very carefully. You'll hear that when you hear the rest of the purport. The fruit is handed down very carefully in such a way that you won't misunderstand. Therefore, the Bhagavatam has 9 cantos before you get to the 10th canto. We are not like Lord Brahma, who can hear Bhagavatam in 4 verses and understand everything. We need careful preparation. Otherwise, we'll misunderstand Krishna's pastimes, as evidenced in India today. But do people think, oh, Krishna, he's the Hindu forest love god? And so many misunderstandings. He dances with others' wives. He cheated in the battle of Kurukshetra. I've been looking at different versions of Bhagavad Gita to see how they misunderstand. And I read that one famous Western author who tried to present Bhagavad Gita. He said, Krishna, he cheated all the time in the battle of Kurukshetra. That's how the Pandavas won. There's so much misunderstanding about Krishna. And therefore, Bhagavatam gradually develops your understanding of Krishna's personal pastimes. Anything else? Yes?
Sometimes, mundane, for example, or different pastimes of Krishna, for example, Dhruva Maharaj's pastime, and they're given many examples in there. Descriptions very elaborate. So, how not to take them as an exaggeration?
Like what?
For example, when Dhruva Maharaj came back from the forest, both of his mothers and his father were showering him with tears, and he took a few showers.
Oh, well, just because you haven't experienced such a situation, does it mean it's impossible? What happens when you drench people with your emotions? Just because you don't bathe them in tears, therefore it's impossible for someone else to do? These are fully developed persons who are living on such a higher level than we are. So their emotional expression is higher. But even Dhruva Maharaj's parents showering with tears doesn't compare with Mother Yashoda's emotional expression when she holds Krishna on her lap and feeds him. It's nothing. No comparison. Our emotional expression in this material world is so, you don't know the word paltry, do you? It's so tiny and trivial. So the Bhagavatam is opening you up to superior emotional expression. So even the emotional expression by Dhruva parents can't compare to Mother Yashoda's emotional expression. When Krishna is interacting with some demon, like when he's carried away by the whirlwind demon Chinavrata, oh, Mother Yashoda, you can't imagine what her devastation is like. After Krishna successfully dispatches the demon, the elder gopis, they have to spend so much time reviving Mother Yashoda. He's all right, he's all right. She's just unconscious with that kind of love we don't know anything about. And then when Mother Yashoda finally becomes conscious again, she starts berating herself. Oh, why did I let Krishna alone? It's all my fault. And then she becomes overwhelmed with happiness as soon as she picks Krishna up. So we don't know anything about that. Therefore, even just the emotional expression by Dhruva Maharaj's parents when he comes back home, we think, oh, that's exaggeration. We're looking at our little famished world, world of emotional famine, you understand? And we're thinking, oh, I've never seen anything like this, and I've never seen a banquet like this in the world of famine, so it must be exaggeration. What about Lord Chaitanya? When he is in the Jagannath Puri temple, he's staring at Lord Jagannath. He's crying so much that there's like a stream of water flowing at his feet from his tears. Oh, exaggeration. There can't be such love. Anything else? Yes. Commitment, duty. What will happen when you marry and you're around the same person every day? How are you going to handle that? You think every day is going to be like an emotional wonderland? You ask some of the older married ladies, is it like that? They say, no. It was duty and commitment. Cannot be minimized. You hear and serve Bhagavatam out of duty and commitment. We are, as I said yesterday, in the convalescent phase. We are ailing and trying to get our health back. So in the convalescent stage, you focus on the doctor's instructions. You don't expect that you're going to be able to experience full health. When you are very sick and in the hospital, what do you do? Tell the doctor, I don't know if I feel like taking the pills today. Who likes taking pills? You just take them because you want to get well. Duty and commitment is most important. Sadhana bhakti is the duty and commitment phase. Then the taste will come. So in the convalescent phase, in the phase of recuperation, intelligence is evidenced by the degree you follow the doctor's instructions. That is intelligence. There's no intelligence separate from that in the recuperating stage. Intelligence is manifested on the part of the patient by the degree that he or she follows the doctor's instructions. Otherwise, if you are so intelligent, how did you get sick? Why are you in the hospital? You should have avoided it. Okay. Anything else? Yes.
suppose Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will hear this tremendous phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So who is he?
He is the great Acharya in our line. He gives very deep explanations based on the science of rasa. But you need quite some preparation and training to be able to understand his commentaries.
Is he coming from Krishna Lila?
Huh?
Is he some personality from the Krishna Lila?
Well, yes. But the point is that his commentaries are giving vision into Krishna's pastimes that he sees. But they're not for beginning devotees. First we have to be convinced of Krishna's power and authority. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.